I'm Jennifer Shookman. I'm the person who's teaching this class. I am a freelance writer. I live in Atlanta. My third book, Six Prayers, God Always Answers, Results May Vary, just came out in May. It was with Tyndale. My fourth book will be Nine Ways God Always Speaks, Offer Not Available in All States. I have also written a number of articles. I don't know what the number is. I know, like they said this morning, that that's okay. They said that Doc Hensley had written 3,000 some articles, and I thought, man, does he just spend like a Saturday counting those? Because I don't know. I'm too busy to do that, but I think that's great. So I've written a number of articles. What I can tell you is that almost everything that I've done in the Christian publishing area, and I've, you know, just described some of that, has come from being at Right to Publish. And there are a lot of connections and things that happen, and almost every publishing opportunity I can trace either to a direct connection here or a connection that was made through somebody here. And so the things that I'm going to tell you are things I've learned from being where you're at, and know from personal experience. As well as now the fact that now that I've done some publishing, some of this material I've run by my editor friends, and they're like, yeah, you're right, tell them that. So that's what we're going to do today, is we're going to talk about basically how to pitch to an editor in under 5 minutes and why you need to do that. I apologize right offhand. I know that you, as a listener to a speaker, don't like a speaker with lots of weird tics. I'm good, I think. Yeah, we're good. We're good. You don't like a speaker with a lot of tics, but I just somewhere, I was telling somebody, on the way to the, from my home to the Atlanta airport, I lost my vision. And so I had to buy new glasses so I can read my notes. And I mean, I literally got to the airport and couldn't read my phone. And so I'm still doing a lot of this. So I apologize. You know, a year from now, I'll be much more comfortable with that. But just give me grace on that. What is a successful pitch? How do you know if you've done a successful pitch? What does it look like? Ooh, is a successful pitch for you. Good, good.
I want to hear an editor say, I'm fascinated.
This is a good, good, okay. What else constitutes a successful pitch?
Tell me more.
Tell me more. Okay, yes.
Can you
pick one in? Yeah, that's the one that constitutes it for me. Absolutely. Yeah, you know, I'm glad if they're ooing and aahing, but unless they ask for something from me, it's not a successful pitch for me. Because my whole goal in the meeting with an editor or publisher here, and I'm going to use the terms interchangeably, but you do the same thing with articles. If you're trying to pitch articles to a magazine or pitch yourself as a writer, it's the same kind of thing. But what I want them to do is say, I want to see your work. I want to see more of it. Because what I know from being on this side of the chair is that you don't really have time to fully evaluate anybody's manuscript in any detail. But you do have enough to know, I think this person can do it. It's a great idea. It fits with what our house is looking for or our magazine is looking for. I want to see more so I can make a more fully informed decision. That's the best you're going to hope for. Okay? Some of you have come here thinking that, you know, if you're really good, that an editor's going to go, you know what? I have a contract in my briefcase and I'd like to offer it to you. That will not happen. It really will not happen. Yes, there are occasional writers that's happened to, but I think if you went on Snopes.com or something, you'd find out it was all one big urban myth. I'm not sure that has ever happened. And so the best you can hope for is an editor who says, yes, tell me more. And that's our goal in here, is to do that. Now, when I say that, I'm going to tell you some ways and tips and techniques, especially for this conference, because I know this conference so well, to get these kinds of appointments and to make these kinds of pitches. But ultimately, something I learned from the very first class that I took at Right to Publish is that God cares more about your manuscript than you do. And you know how much you care about it, right? He cares about it even more than that. And so put him in charge. One of the things I always do before coming to this conference is I just pray for divine appointments. And sometimes those happen in the hallway when I bump into somebody. I go, oh, you too? Me too. Sometimes it happens when I'm carrying my tray and I don't know where to sit and I'm trying to decide. And I go, okay, she's wearing yellow. I'm going to sit there, you know? And then I'm like, wow, God really had us here for a reason. And, you know, it happened in the lunch line today. There was a woman who was ahead of me and I said, is this your first time here? And she said, yeah. And I said, grab two glasses. Because those little glasses aren't enough to drink. And unless you've been here before, you don't know that. So we got to the table and, you know, then it turns out there was a whole bunch of connections she made with some people who were there. This will happen for you too. And what I'm going to do now is teach you to be prepared for when these happen with an editor or a publisher. Okay? All right, so why a 5-minute pitch? I was at Mount Hermon, which is another well-known Christian writers conference, and I was there, and I wanted to pitch an idea to Vicki Crumpton. I didn't have you know, she wasn't, I didn't have an appointment with her. And I couldn't get one. The appointments were out. And so I saw her in a class or something. And I said, Vicki, can I have 5 minutes of your time to pitch you an idea? And she said, do you really want a 15-minute appointment? And I said, no, I just want 5 minutes of your time because I just want to pitch you this idea. And in 5 minutes, we'll know whether you like it or not. And she said, wow, only if every writer knew that. It doesn't take an editor who's been in this business very long to know that. That's really all it takes, is for them to get an idea of what your idea is. They can love your idea, and you still may not be able to deliver on it, but at least they'll know whether the idea is a fit for them, for their house, that kind of thing. So really, it only takes 5 minutes. Those 15-minute appointments are not really necessary. So one of the things that you want to do is be able to narrow things down into little increments, and that's what we'll focus on here. The other reason you want a 5-minute appointment is be able to do that is because you don't have an appointment. You've used your allotted appointments. You signed up and, you know, ended up getting an appointment with me, and really you wanted one with Tyndale, and, you know, you got on the wrong name, and now you're all upset and that kind of thing. You can then get that appointment with Tyndale or with whoever it is that you want by just stopping them in the hallway and going, do you have 5 minutes during this break? You know, do you have 2 minutes? Do you have 30 seconds? I could just tell you an idea, and if you like it, we can talk more later. If you've got a good idea and they're interested, they will find a time to talk to you, and I've seen it happen here. I know of an editor who said that he was busy all day, didn't have it, and somebody said, could you have 30 seconds to listen to my idea? And then the guy ended up canceling his lunch plans and went to lunch with this guy. So those things happen. So one of the reasons you want to have your 5-minute, even a 30-second pitch is so you can take advantage of those kinds of opportunities when you don't have the appointments you need. The other advantage is that this is a numbers game, that you're here to try and sell your manuscript. And it's a numbers game. It's not going to be something, most manuscripts aren't bought by everybody. Everybody has their own little niche. Every editor's a little bit different. There is probably a slot, or maybe if you're a really good writer and you've got a really good topic, you know, 10 slots or something that might fit to. But it's a numbers game. You're going to have to try and pitch it to a whole lot of people before you find the one that it connects with. You know, for example, you're writing a book on cancer and you write it to a, you know, 22-year-old editor who's now had a lot of life experiences, they may not be all that interested in it. But you write it to somebody whose mom, or pitch it to somebody whose mom's dying of cancer right now, you're going to get a lot more of their attention. So it's a numbers game. And so the shorter you make your pitch, the more time you have to do more pitches. So that's another reason why you want to do a 5-minute pitch. Microsoft does books. They publish books, obviously, that are about computer kinds of things. But in their proposal, they ask for a one-sentence description of it. So if you were going to pitch to Microsoft, you'd have to have your book down to one sentence. That's not a bad thing to do. In movie business in Hollywood, they call them log lines. And again, it's the same kind of deal. It's just one sentence, a very short description of that. All right, let's go back first before we talk about how to do that. How do you get those 5-minute appointments? You know, how do you do those kinds of things? First of all, take advantage to sign up for as many appointments as you are legally allowed to do. And if I heard right, and don't quote me on this because I'm not representing them, I'm just recalling what I think I heard this morning. If you're here all week, you get 2 appointments. But if you're here today and there are appointments that are empty, you can go back and sign up for another one. Is that correct? They also said if there are slots and holes where nobody is coming, you can go and sign up for those. Well, if you watch the sheets, especially if there's somebody that you really want to see, something's going to happen. Somebody's going to have an emergency and have to leave. Somebody's going to cancel their appointment because they realize they really shouldn't be talking to an agent. They really needed to talk to a magazine editor. You know, those kinds of things will happen. So you can watch and take those slots. If it's just a short time before their thing, nobody wants to sit in there just doing nothing. So they'd rather have you come and take the slot. So you can legally do those kinds of things if you're watched for them, if you're savvy about it. So first of all, take advantage of all those legal ways to get a 5-minute appointment. If that doesn't work, what you want to do is you want to, I heard somebody say that, you know, I'll take them to lunch. But you know what? They probably, if an editor is here, they probably have other agenda. They probably either need to eat lunch because most of us on staff are supposed to eat meals in the area so that we can talk to you all. So they probably can't just, you know, like go somewhere for lunch or sit in a quiet booth with you. Or they have other things that they're doing here. Maybe they're meeting some of their authors and they want to spend time with them or those kinds of things. So if you think, hey, I'll buy your lunch, that's not really an enticing offer to an editor. And they'll probably say, I'm sorry, I've got other plans. But what you can say is, are you going to lunch there? Can I sit at your table? Or, you know, can I walk over with you? I mean, that's all you need is the walk from here to there. It's 5 minutes. You can pitch to them. And so they say, I've already got plans here. Are you walking back to the dorm? Can I walk with you and just pitch my idea in the time it takes us to get there. And if when we get there you like it and you're interested, we can talk more, and if not, I'm out of here. Those are the ways to get those kinds of appointments. And that's exactly what I did in the conference where I was here the first time and where I sold my book. I just took every kind of opportunity that I could to get those 5 minutes appointments. The other one that I did was, in addition to eating at their table, if you have that opportunity, you know, find out who they are. If you don't know who they are, look and see where they're teaching classes. Poke your head in so you get a visual on them, and then look for them in the table, in the lunchroom, and in dinner time. But if all of that fails, the last thing that you can do is catch them on the panels. This is probably, Lynn probably wouldn't like me saying this, but if you notice, after the panels, people like rush the stage, right? You know, and there's a little line that forms of two or three people. Can't hurt. If you can get up to them and go, hey, can I have 5 minutes? I know you don't have any appointments left. Is there a time I can get, you know, or do you have 30 seconds now during the breaks? You know, catch them and say, do you have 30 seconds? I know you're eating your muffin. You don't have to talk. I just want to tell you, you know. Use every opportunity you have to get those opportunities to meet with them. All right, let's say you have an appointment, a 15-minute appointment, and you're going to actually go in and sit down and talk with them. What should you do and what should you bring? Well, let's talk about what you should bring, first of all. You should bring something. Something. Anything. If you are either prepared and have something with you. If you don't, you know, bring something. Maybe it's a business card with your name on it. You know, just so that they can remember your name. Because what happens is you'll sit down, your name tag will turn over, and they'll be going, Teresa, Susie, you know, kind of thing. You want to have them remember your name as much as possible. So even if it's a business card that you hand them, even if you don't have anything written out, you know, hand them something. If you have time to prepare, or if you've actually brought some things, one of the best things I think you can hand, especially on a book, is what I call a one sheet. And a one sheet is just basically one piece of paper with all the information they need to know about your idea, about your book, and about you. So what my one sheet might look like, it might have a picture of me, my name, address information, phone number, email, websites. I would probably have a little bit of my writing history, you know, what I've done, so that they can tell I'm a legitimate writer, that I've done some things. If I weren't a legitimate writer, if I hadn't published a lot, at that point I would put down what my experience is. So if I were writing on nutrition and I were an RN, I would play that up. You know, I'm an RN who's had 24 years of experience doing blah, blah, blah. So I would put something in that gives me credibility, okay, whether it's writing or whether it's experience. And then below that, I would just put a short synopsis of whatever my book was about. So if I was writing a book, you know, I'd have a one paragraph thing on it. If I had a couple of books, I would actually list both of them. Maybe up to as many as three. You don't want to have 10, because if you have 10 unwritten, unpublished books all of a sudden, you don't look real appetizing to a publisher. So pick your strongest three. And if you've done your homework ahead of time, you probably know which editors you want to see and which books are right for them. So put all your, you know, romantic comedies on one thing and all your nonfiction on another, and then when you hand that person, hand the one sheet that's most appropriate for what they're interested in. You don't want to hand a fiction sheet to a nonfiction editor, and you don't want to do the opposite. So when you create that one sheet, create it in mind with what you're trying to sell, but also with who you're trying to pitch it to, and then have everything on that sheet sell you on that. Okay? So if you're a fiction writer, you want to have everything you've ever done in fiction writing. If you're a nonfiction writer, you want to have everything you've done in nonfiction writing, and any kind of platform you have or any kind of experience. And you just want to succinctly put that together in a little one sheet. There's not a formal format. You can go online and type in one sheet. A lot of speakers have them on their websites. You can find examples and see different ways of doing it. But there's not an official format. Like I said, I usually include my picture because I figure if they want to take something with them, then this has everything that they would need to remember about me. What's great is if they like your idea, this is also a place where they can take notes and take it home with them. It's very, very rare that an editor is going to want to take anything from you. When they're at a conference, they'll probably say, send it to me. Usually they've traveled, they've got suitcases, you know, with the whole pay more for your more suitcases and the weight limits and that kind of thing. They're not going to want to take back anything extra. I remember I was at one of the first writers' conferences I did where I took appointments, and the girl said, here, so you have something to read on the airplane on the way home. And I thought, man, if you're a writer in publishing, you always have something to read, you know, you always, and usually it's something that needs to be done. And she was just like, just for fun, if you want to read it. They're not going to want to do it just for fun. I don't mean to be cruel. They just don't. They want to do it if they're interested, but probably they want you to send it to them. So if they really are interested, that one sheet is a great way for them to at least remember you have it, or even if it's a business card again. If you have a proposal, I would bring that as well, especially for nonfiction book, fiction book, if you have a sample chapter, bring that to your appointment, but don't lead with it. And we'll talk more about kind of what you do in the appointment. But have that. So in case they do show some interest and they go, well, you know, I really need to see the writing, which is what happened to me one time. I was pitching an idea on a book to an agent, and he said, well, you know, I really need to see the writing. And I said, oh, funny you should say that, because here it is. And so to have that in your arsenal, to have that ready, is a good thing. Now, I've just said that, and some of you are going, oh, man, I don't have any of this stuff. I didn't bring anything with me. I don't have, and this is what happened last year. I taught this class and went through all these details on what you should do and how you should have it, and people left, and I thought they were all encouraged and excited, and I heard back later that some of them were like, I didn't have any of that stuff. Well, what was interesting is after I taught this class on it, I had a book, as you know, coming out about prayer. And there were a couple of magazines that did a lot of stuff on prayer. And so all of a sudden it occurred to me, I really need to pitch prayer articles to them because that would be a good way to sell my book. But you know what? I didn't have anything with me. I didn't, because I wasn't planning on pitching prayer articles when I got here. But then when I saw that, I thought, oh. So I went and had the appointments without something. So don't let what I'm saying become a discouragement to you. Use this as a way to prepare for future ones, or for if there's that one really big appointment you've got on Saturday and you have time between now and then to prepare for it. So don't let this, again, become a discouragement. Yes?
Is there a place on campus that you can type in the computer and print?
I think they have something upstairs, and I think there might be some place in the dorms. Is that correct? Fisher Hall. Okay. Okay. Okay.
So are you finding when we first meet them, we would give this one sheet?
We're going to talk through exactly what you do and how you handle what. Yeah, and I'm getting there. Thank you. But if I don't, raise your hand again. Yes.
One quick practical question. Is there any place in this building or in Fisher Hall where you can make photocopies?
Yes, upstairs they have a place where you can do photocopies. That's my understanding. And if you do, I don't know where exactly, but somebody at the desk will know.
Upstairs and to the left,
they say. Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. If I just want like an editor to critique the work that I've done, is that something that I could put to one of these people here?
I would not go to an editor and ask them to critique my work. They're here essentially to look for things that they can buy and publish. So unless it was a real estate magazine or had some crossover potential to those, they wouldn't really be interested in that. And they also don't have time in a 15-minute appointment to critique it. So if you really want to critique, a couple of things I would do is one is you can pay to have it. You get one free critique by submitting it to the critique service. Or the second thing I would do would be to talk to a freelance writer. So those appointments are a little easier to come by. As freelance writers, I was telling somebody earlier, we're not in quite as high demand because we can't buy your manuscripts. So we have a lot of open slots, and so we do have a little bit more time sometimes to look through those. Some freelance writers, if they are not teaching a lot of classes or they have time, they'll say, well, I'll take it and look at it and bring it back to you tomorrow kind of thing. So that's what I would do is I would go to them first. Now, with that said, being a freelance writer, writers always have their own way of doing things and their own voice. So an editor is a little bit more dispassionate and will help you keep your own voice. So sometimes when you get critiques from writers, they're not always the best critiques you can get. Now, I think you can learn something from them, and I have. And I have very strong critique groups. Every book I've written, if you look at the acknowledgments, and I've got 15 people who've read it and given me feedback on it. And I couldn't do without them. But at the same time, writers have very, you know, kinds of views on things. And so don't let them become a discouragement because they didn't get it or they're trying to shape it like their stuff. So they're taking your real estate and making a romantic fiction comedy. And you're like, not what I wanted to do with it. So just that's my only caveat with having writers look at your stuff. But they're normally the freelance writers are really good because they have a broad perspective of the different kinds of things that are out there as well. Yes.
Explain a little more. I've heard different things than what a proposal is.
Yeah.
What it should include.
I'll just do a brief overview so that anybody who's stuck on this will know, but there's actually, I think, classes being taught in this. A proposal is essentially a business document This is not a writing document so much as it is a business document meant to sell your writing. And it's used always in the case of nonfiction books. It has specific parts to it. You have a basic summary of the book. You have a marketing plan for the book. You have who the competitive books are. So if they went into the bookstore and didn't buy yours, who else's would they buy? You have sample chapters. You have an outline of the book. There, you have your bio. You have very specific things. Fiction is similar, but a few little bit of different tweaks on it. But the proposal is essentially a business document, so for two reasons. One is it allows an editor to discern whether or not this is something they're interested in without having to read the entire manuscript. And it also serves as a way for them to give some input. So if they buy your idea, they can, if it's only in the proposal stage, you haven't written the entire thing, they can give you some feedback and go, you know what, that's great, but if we could make it for 20-somethings instead of 40-somethings, this would sell better.
But it's not what's in your book. I mean, you're not putting a sample.
You would have a sample chapter usually at the end of the proposal.
Okay, but it's
yeah.
That's
correct. That's why I say it's a business document because it's other stuff that's not. You have to almost put on a different hat to write the proposal. As a matter of fact, some people hire people to write proposals because it's so different than the other kinds of writing you do. But there are some great classes on it. If there's not, the best book on proposal writing, for those of you who haven't done it before, is Jeff Herman's 10 Proposals That Sold and Why. Jeff Herman's 10 Proposals That Sold and Why. I think it's out of print. They've done a second edition, but it's available on Amazon and through used books or through their used book thing sometimes. But that's a great book because it gives you a basic overview of the different pieces, and then it also gives you 10 samples so you can find one that yours kind of fits and then follow that model. Okay?
Yep.
Probably the extra handouts are in the back, I'm guessing. Yeah. Okay? Yes. Yeah, no, I would, it's the same kind of situation. In good question, thank you. For the article, I would do the same kinds of things. I would bring, if you have a little bio sheet or something, you could do the same type of thing. Here's my bio. I'm Jennifer Shookman. I'm the mother of an adopted child, and I want to write an article on why adoption is a better option than infertility treatments or something, okay? So I could bring that in on a little one page and hand that to them. If they're interested and say, I'd like to see the article, go, well, here it is, right? But what you might find out is that you've written a 1,200-word article and they want an 800-word article. Or you've written a first-person experience and they want a technical. So sometimes leading with the article is not always helpful because if they're interested, they might say, you know what, I'm really interested, send me this. And you go, okay, tell me what you're looking for. And they can give you their specific guidelines and you can match that baby right to it, right? When I was a new writer, I started out by writing articles. I couldn't do it on spec. Like, I was afraid of assignments because I didn't know if I'd ever be able to do what they asked me to do. And so I wrote everything, but I didn't always lead with that because I could rewrite and make it fit what they needed to. So when you're in that appointment, you know, one of the things you want to do is find out more about what they're doing. Let's actually go on into the what actually happens during the appointment because that'll answer some of the questions. But thank you for bringing that magazine question up because I didn't address that. All right, the first thing I do at any of these appointments is I introduce myself, and I try to find a way to connect with the person I'm speaking to, okay? So I might go up and go, hi, I'm Jennifer Shookman. We met at Write to Publish last year. I had an appointment with you, and you gave me some really great advice. Or I sit through the panels, and I would say, hi, I'm Jennifer Shookman. I heard you say your favorite ride on, because they do these kind of crazy questions, your favorite ride at the theme park is roller coasters. I love roller coasters. My dad used to build them, you know, whatever it is. Truthful things. Not saying make it up. Truthful things. But find something you can connect with them on. Because then immediately they'll go, oh, really? That's so cool. I've always loved roller coasters. And you get a little bit of dialogue. It gives you a chance to take a breath. You know, it gives you a chance to sort of check out their personality. Are they deep and serious and thoughtful? Are they humorous? Are they funny? You know, and so that you can match your tone and pace to who this person is. Then you won't be having a 15-minute appointment with them.
They'll be here just for 15-minute appointments.
Oh, then you don't have that option. And that's the thing. Don't let this bog you down. Don't feel like, oh, well, I couldn't know them. No, you just do what you can. You know, hey, I'm Jennifer Shookman, and I really wanted to have an appointment with you because I saw your website, and the kinds of books you guys do are exactly what I want to do. Just whatever kind of connection that you can make with them. If you've met them in the past, you want to make sure you note that because they won't remember. Chances are good. And if they do, then you can always be surprised. I always assume no one remembers me. And I'm pleasantly surprised when they do. But that takes the embarrassment off the other person going, yeah, remember we had a 15-minute appointment last year, and they're like, mm. So help them out by introducing them and reminding them of anything that you think that they should know, and just do that to connect with them. I would also, you know, if you've done any research, and I would suggest you do that. I'm the person who wrote the how to get published at Right to Publish from somebody who did. And so a lot of people say, oh, wow, that's a lot of stuff to do. I did that for the first couple of years I was here because I was really serious about getting published, and I wanted to make sure I had all the research down. So I had notes on people and understood who they were and where they were and what they were from and looked at their bios and saw their pictures and did those kinds of things. And so if I did that with those folks, I said, you know, hi, I've researched your company, and I think you do this really interesting kind of book, and that's the kind of thing I'm interested in doing. Now, on the same token, I've also sat down with people I didn't even have a clue who they were because I didn't plan to meet with them, and somebody said, you need to talk to so-and-so. And then I just said, you know, don't lead with this. I did once, don't do it. I don't know who you are, but somebody else told me to come and talk to you. Because what happens then is that, first of all, it's really awkward and stupid, and so I shouldn't have done it. But second of all, then they spend the whole time telling you who they are. And that's really not what you care about. What you really want to care about is your writing and if they're interested. So avoid the mistakes I've made. After you introduce yourself, the first thing that I usually lead with is my publishing history or my writing experience. So if you've had any writing experience at all, now's the time to tell them. You've introduced yourself. Hi, I'm Jennifer. We met here last year. Hi, I'm Jennifer. I saw your introduction to the class, and I thought it looked really funny. I have been a freelance writer for 4 years. I've written 3 articles that have been published, and I've had lots of stuff done on the web. I'm Jennifer Shookman. My 3rd book just came out from Tyndale. My 4th comes out next year. I've done mostly nonfiction for adults, but I'm interested in moving into fiction. Whatever your bit is, you want to give them a brief overview so they know who they're talking to. Okay? Because if you're brand new, they have to look at things and ask questions differently than if you've been in the industry for 20 years. So you want to give them that clue so that they know who you are. So just give them a brief overview of your experience in the industry. Okay? Now, a lot of you are going to say, well, I don't have any experience. I've never published before. I don't have any credits. That's okay. Tell them at that point something that makes it relevant to your book. Okay? You're writing a book on marriage, and so you say, hi, I'm Jennifer. It's really good to meet you, blah, blah, blah. I've been married 10 times. I think that qualifies me to know how to pick a good husband, or, you know. Whatever your experience is, and you know, they talk a lot about platform, and oftentimes even I don't have a platform yet. I'm not that well known or that well done. So more, think of it in terms of experience. What qualifies you to do this? You're an adoptive mother and you're writing an article on adoption. You are the mother of 4 preschoolers and you're writing for MomSense magazine. You know, whatever it is that qualifies you, you want to lead with that if you don't have the writing experience. Yes, ma'am. Mention it both. Yeah, I would say I've just started writing. I've published 3 articles in the past year. But what I've really been doing is selling software, and that's why I think it's really important for, you know, me to tell you about my article about buying software. Yes.
If you have not been published but you have an agent, should that come up in your conversation?
Yes. Yeah. So actually, that's one of the things you would want to do is talk about, I'm represented by so-and-so because there are certain things they don't want to talk about with you and things they need to talk about with your agent. So, yeah, that's something you should mention up front. Okay.
I have an appointment at 4:15 and a friend has an appointment at 4:30. We're writing books on a similar topic and we have a publisher in mind. Mm-hmm. Is it fine if we both go to both or should we stay out of the meeting?
If it's okay for the two of you and it's okay for the person, I would go up together with you and say, this is Susie, I'm Susie, I've got the 3:15 appointment. This is, you know, Kelly, she's got the 3:30. We're actually doing the same thing. We're wondering if we could have a 30-minute together with you. And I wouldn't see why they would say no. Okay. All right, so you've gone up, you've introduced yourself, and you've included your experience. The next thing you need to do, and I know this is going to sound silly, but you need to tell them what your manuscript is. Okay, I'm writing a fiction book. I am writing a nonfiction book. I have a magazine article on the topic, or I write magazine articles. You need to specifically say that, because what happens is sometimes in these pitches, you'll get so excited about what you're telling. You're telling the story, and I was married 10 times, blah, 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 and they're like, you were married 10? No, my character was married 10 times. Oh, it's fiction, you know. And so you're going to spend more time crossing wires than you are going to get on about doing the kinds of things that you need to do. So right away, after you've said, hi, I'm Jennifer, we met blah, 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 my experience is such and such, I'm working on a nonfiction book.
Okay? Now we get to the hard part. This is where you give them the overall concept statement, the one sentence that sells your book, the 30-second pitch, the two or three sentences that give the main idea of your book. And this is hard to do. It's hard to do. I know it is. Because really what you want to do is you want to come up and you go, well, see, there's this main character, and they were married, and then they went to here, and then, oh, but that's not important because the guy over here, you know. But as soon as you do that, the editor's eyes glaze over, and they really don't want to hear anything else you have to say. They don't, because you can't even explain it clearly. How are you going to be able to write it clearly? So you need to have down to a 30-second pitch, here's what my book is about. Okay? Let me give you a couple examples. I'm just making these up, and I'm not saying they're good. I'm just saying they're examples. this book is Purpose-Driven Life for the Millennial Generation. The book says that it's a journey, not an end point. Okay? So if you're pitching a book on purpose, you compare it to something else. You talk about who the audience is for, why it's different than what's out there. You said all that in two sentences. Purpose-driven life for the millennial generation. The book says it's all about the journey, not the end point. Okay, very succinct. How about this? A pastor dies in a car accident, visits heaven, and comes back to life where he faces incredible pain and hardship while overcoming his injuries. What's that? 90 minutes in heaven, right? Okay, but see, it's just the basics of the story. It's not all the, okay, and this guy went to heaven, and you wouldn't believe it. He was in the car accident, he was dead, and then it's not all that. It's just a very simple little description of what you're doing. Okay? And you're like, but the details are important. I know they're important, but they're not important unless they're interested in the concept of what you're doing. Whether the concept is a story, or whether the concept is a nonfiction idea, or whether it's the concept of the article. If you're at Christian Women, you know, magazine, Today's Christian Women, and you're pitching an article on how men taking steroids can build faster muscles, it doesn't matter what the details are. They're not interested in that article. Okay? So that's why you want to narrow this down to a specific little statement of what it is that you're trying to do. Does that make sense? Yes, ma'am. Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. But many of you didn't. Some of you didn't, I should say. Yeah, absolutely. And this is something you want to craft and you want to carefully do it. What I always try to do is to do it in a provocative way so that they want to ask me more questions about it. Okay, so here's a couple I just made up. A small town pastor defrauds his church to save his congregation. You want to know more, don't you? How did he defraud his church? How did that save the congregation? What happened? That's the kind of thing you want to do, because then the editor's going to go, oh, that's interesting. Tell me more. Right? Again, I'm just making these up. After a single mother becomes a Christian, her life takes a turn for the worst. Oh, well, shouldn't it be better? Why is it worse? What happened? I want to know. Okay? A youth group is taken hostage by a prison escapee. Okay? Now, what happens? Does the guy get saved? Do the kids get murdered? What happens? Right? You want to know. That's what you want to do in this little pitch you have. You just want to give them enough information with the idea of getting them to ask for more. And this is pure psychology. Because if they ask questions, they're more engaged than if you're just sitting there telling them. It's just psychology. It's just like if I come up to you and say, oh, you know, I want to know what I do, here's what I, and I start telling you all the things I write about, you're going to pretty soon glaze over, right? But if you go, oh, you wrote a book, tell me about that, and I tell you a little bit, and you go, well, tell me more. The conversation becomes more interesting to you because you're leading it. You're going where you want to go. I'm not telling you everything that I want to tell you about the book. I'm telling you the things you want to know about the book. And that's the way it is with editors and publishers, too. Let them lead the conversation. And if you do it with an enticing sentence, and then they go, oh, that's interesting, tell me more, then you have the opportunity to do that. There's also a very practical reason for doing this. Let's say you're writing this book, and they go, oh, so the guy was injured in a bicycle accident, so he must be 17, right? And you're thinking, no, he was 46 with a family. But yes, he could be 17, right? I mean, really, truly, if you're writing a book and a publisher says, if the main character's 17 instead of 46, I'll publish it, wouldn't you do that? You know, so I'm not saying lie. If you really can't change it, if it really has to be a car wreck and the guy's saying it needs to be a truck, you go, it really can't be because there's all these reasons it has to be a car or whatever. Don't change it. But if it's something that's simple that can be changed, then part of what you want to do is in that give and take, see what they're interested in. If they're interested in 17-year-olds because they know 17-year-olds buy more car accident books than 46-year-olds, well, then you want to write for that market. You want to do that. So listen to them and interact. Yes?
What if you're not sure if something should be an article or a book? Can you pitch it as an article that could be a possible book later?
You know what? It's one or the other. because either it's a big enough idea for a book or it's not. So what I would do is set up an appointment with a freelancer beforehand, talk to them about it, have them help you sort it out, and then meet with the appropriate person.
Okay. Okay. Before I go to my appointment,
yes.
Do I give them that one page first, or do I talk
to them? I normally hand it to them so that because they're used to reading and having something in their hands, they don't feel quite so awkward just staring at you, and you're sitting in those weird chairs, and you're all trying to do the arm thing. And so they have it in their hands. They can look down it, and they can also ask you questions. You may not have to start with the one sentence. They might say, oh, this is interesting. Tell me more about. And then you can follow up with that. But yeah, I always hand with it, hey, I'm Jennifer, shake their hands and hand them it, and they kind of look at it, and then I start talking. I give them my experience and stuff while they're kind of glancing at it.
What is your transition from, like, I'm writing a fiction book? I mean, what do you just lead in with?
Yeah, so I might say, I'm writing a fiction book, and basically here's what happens. You know, or I'm working on this romantic novel that's blah, 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 and then lead right into it. Or you can combine those. You don't have to say it's nonfiction, and you know it doesn't have to be that stiff. You can say it's a nonfiction book about, and then just launch into your two sentences or whatever.
Okay. Can you give us some of those clever examples like you were just giving, but for nonfiction?
For nonfiction, yes. As a matter of fact, I can. And I can give you variations on a theme. What I did is I made some examples of ones that I did for Six Prayers. For Six Prayers, depending on who I was pitching the book to and what I was talking about, I might say, you don't have to follow a prayer formula for God to answer your prayers in some surprising and unexpected ways. Okay, so I'm writing a prayer book that you don't have to follow a formula for God to answer your prayer in surprising and unexpected ways. Or, to somebody else, I might say something like, everybody prays. This book just takes a look at the kind of prayers people pray, regardless of what faith tradition they're in, and asks whether or not God answers them. Okay, and then you go, oh, well, that sounds interesting, right? Yeah. Another one that I used was, this is not a how-to book on prayer, but rather a journey through all the questions we all ask, but we don't want to ask out loud. Okay, and so then somebody goes, well, what are those questions, right? So you can also make comparisons. You cannot say, it's better than Karen Kingsbury stuff. Because she sells a whole lot more than you, okay? So what you can say, it's sort of Karen Kingsbury-esque, or it's like Karen Kingsbury's, you know, Tuesday, except blah, 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 okay? It's like Purpose-Driven Life, although nonfiction editors are so tired of hearing that. It's like Purpose-Driven Life, except it's for teenagers. It's... you can use, if there's movies, it's Indiana Jones for the young adult crowd. I guess Indiana Jones is, but it's Indiana Jones for the geriatric set. How's that? Okay, so you can use those kinds of things. What you don't want to say is that, you know, I'm the next Indiana Jones writer or something like that. You don't want to oversell yourself, but you can make those kinds of comparisons. And sometimes that's really helpful because then immediately they get, you know, what it is. What I do when I'm writing these is pick out the main idea of what your book is, the key words of your book. So in the case of Six Prayers, it was about prayers. It was not about formulas. It was about whether or not God answers them. So all of a sudden, you can see that there are some basic words that I would find in my description. 90 Minutes in Heaven, you know, it's going to be about a car accident, somebody going to heaven, what happens afterwards, the experiences there. You can immediately pick out some kind of key ideas. Yes, that doesn't cover all of the side characters. Yes, that doesn't cover all of the side plots. But that's okay. What you want to do is pick out this main idea. So look for those key words. Who the audience is, that's another thing, especially if you're writing this for a specific target audience. It's for moms of preschoolers. It's Purpose-Driven Life for moms of preschoolers. It's Left Behind for moms of preschoolers. You know, whatever. And again, those are bad pitches. Don't use those. But I'm just trying to give you an idea of what it might be like. So you can use your audience in the pitch. The other thing I would do is I would write it out, and I would practice it. And if we have time, I'll actually have some of you do that. But write it out so that you have something concrete, and then you sort of memorize it, and then you can do variations on it, versus just thinking in your head, because what's going to happen is you're going to try and memorize it in your head, then you're going to stumble over the words, and then you're going to go, well, that wasn't the important part, and you're going to skip around on it. So write it out. It's just a couple of sentences. Write it out on a napkin at lunch, I don't care, and then just kind of memorize it. Now, here's the easy part. You can practice this really easily, because what happens when you sit down at lunch? Somebody next to you goes, what do you write? Right? Isn't that what happened to everybody at lunch today? Something, what do you write? What do you do? Right? So now you can use your 30-second pitch. I'm doing a nonfiction book about, and then tell them. And then you can see how they react. They go, oh, and then they turn to the person next to them. It didn't work. It didn't work. Okay? And that might be them, but it might be somebody else, or it might be something else that you know, they just didn't like, you know, they don't like prayer or something, right? But if you can see their lights go off, you can watch this, you can see that when somebody's engaged in the conversation and when they know. So look for that. If their lights, their eyes sparkle when you say something, or they go, oh, or their eyebrows wrinkle, you know that they want to know more. That's a successful pitch. So as you're practicing it, you can tweak it. You know, prayers always, God answers work better than don't follow prayer formulas. See which one of those work. Okay? And look at that. And the great news is you've got lots of room to practice here, because everybody you bump into is going to ask you the same question. Okay? And if you're really nervous or scared about it, make an appointment with a freelancer and go, if there's appointments available, go pitch it to them. Say, I'm just really kind of worried about this. Can I pitch it to you? And have them help you craft it. Yes and no. For example, the example Doc Hensley gave this morning, what was it, Barking Made Easy, right? Well, that's interesting. You want to go, well, what's that about, right? But if yours is, if it's 10 ways to clean a sloppy person up, well, okay, what are those 10 ways? Those kinds of things are interesting. But if your title is Susie's Bedroom, that's not going to do anything. So you got to have a really good title if you're going to do that. And then, of course, absolutely, because sometimes if it's a good title, it summarizes it, it's clever, it's funny, it's interesting, and it'll work. But if it's not a good title, don't bring the title up. And this is, again, a new writer's do, and I've done this too, so I don't say this to make fun of anybody. I say it because I've been there and done it. New writers go, I've got a great title, And what the editor's thinking is, yeah, but do you have a great book? Do you have a great article? Because when somebody leads with a title, they probably don't. They probably don't, because they're telling you the title, or they'd be telling you their concept if it were really good. So don't lead with just like, I've got this great title, Susie's Bedroom. The other thing I would mention in my pitch to them is anything noteworthy. Any endorsements that you've got? This book is Karen Kingsbury-esque, and she's agreed to write the foreword to it. Oh, well, you know what? That's going to make them sit up and take notice. It's a book on diabetes, and I'm the president of the American Diabetes Association. Oh, well, that's going to make them take notice. So anything that's newsworthy, anything that's, interesting. Google was just added to the dictionary, Dennis Hensley said, right? So if you had some insider scoop on what it means to work in the Google environment, and you're writing an article about that, you can go, well, my brother-in-law happens to be, the vice president of Google. Well, okay, that's interesting. So mention those kinds of things after you've given the concept, anything that relates to it, anything that's important, newsworthy, that makes sense.
If you're a speaker, and this is the kind of thing that people inquire of you, like, where's the book, is this where you would say something like
Absolutely, that? I'd say that in the beginning, in the experience section. If you haven't written a lot, I would say I'm a speaker who's spoken to over, 10,000 people in the last 3 years. I generally speak 52 times a year, and I normally speak in churches and in Boy Scout meetings, whatever it is. And then go into whatever it is. Yeah, that's your experience. That's an important thing.
I'm talking about that people ask, where do I get this? How can I get this? Is that relevant or no?
No. The assumption is if you're a speaker and you're speaking to an audience and you're doing this over and over again, people want you back because you're good. And if they want you back because they're good, they'll probably buy something you're selling. So you don't need to tell them. It's sort of like saying, my mom really wants me to do a book. She says I'm a good writer. So the fact that they ask for it is because you're a good speaker. So stop at good speaker. So, and the way you say good speaker, you don't go, I'm a good speaker. You say, I speak at 40 events a year. Usually there are over 100 people. I get repeat invitations, And so I would have the opportunity to sell books there, because that's what they want to know. They don't really care whether you're a good speaker or not. They want to know if you're going to be able to sell books. So numbers. If you're a speaker, numbers. If you have other kinds of things, you know, numbers are important because that's what they want to know. Yes?
Yes, I want to know, since you brought up the subject of numbers, in word counts, an article or a book, what words are considered as part of it?
In the count? All of them. Yes, yes. Actually, in Word, there's a place to do that. But you know what? I'll talk to you about that a little bit after class because I can tell you an easy way to do that. And I'll move on here. But remind me, if you will, and just stick around, and I'll be happy to answer that in specific detail after class. But yes. The other thing I would say in this pitch meeting is why this editor is a good fit. I know that you did Purpose Driven Life, and this is similar to Purpose Driven Life. I know that you used to have cancer, and so this is a book on cancer. I thought you'd understand. Whatever it is, if there's some connection that you know about, make sure you mention that too. That'll, you know, make them go, oh, okay. Do not try and talk them into it. I know there's a temptation. If they only understood how great your stuff was, they'd want it. I know. But the truth is if your stuff's so great and they don't want it, you do not want them to have it. When you go, why would you say that? I want to get a book published. Well, here's the deal. If you're publishing a book that a publisher does not know how to publish, you aren't going to sell many copies of that. So I was actually at Write to Publish, somebody I had dinner with, and she's like, well, and I pitched this idea to the editor, and he said, there's no market for that. And I said, yes, there is, and I started giving him statistics for it. Which was fine to sort of educate him. He said, no, nobody's going to buy that. And I told him, yes, they would, because I did this, and I did, and people do this, and all kinds of things. And he just doesn't know. And so I was telling, and I thought, man, I would not want that guy to publish that book. Her idea was a good one. I think she did later get it published somewhere else. But why would she want that publisher to publish it? Believe me, you don't, because you won't sell any copies of your book. And it'll be harder to get a book contract the next time, because you didn't sell a lot of copies of your book. So you want to go where the best thing is. If the editor's not getting it, then at that point you can thank them and go, okay, thanks for your time. Or if you have another idea, you can pitch another idea. Or you can say, I know this isn't right for you, but from your experience, do you have anybody you'd suggest I talk to? Or from your experience, do you think this is a concept that'll work? Or from your experience, is this how you would do this, or do you have any suggestions? Use that time for that, because that'll be valuable input you can't get anywhere else. Because these people know these things, right? So use it for that. Don't use it to try and talk them into it. Because you don't want them to do it if you have to talk them into it. Okay? Do not burn bridges. I know that sounds real obvious. But let me tell you my story. When I was here, my first book was a book on leading a legacy. And I came to Write to Publish, and I had no idea if anybody would be interested or not. And I met with, actually was met with a publishing house I didn't plan to meet with, and that was the whole conversation about he was telling me all about the publishing house, and I never really got to pitch the book. But he really liked the proposal and was interested. That led to a series of other things. I had my, you know, however many meetings I could actually have, but then I had a lot of 5-minute appointments in the hallway and those kinds of things. By the time I left here, I think I had 8 or 9 people who said, send me your manuscript, which was really great. But one editor wasn't interested. He said, nope, not for us. And I was like, well, the other 8 were, you know. What's wrong with you? But I didn't say that. I just said thank you very much and went on. And it was a 5-minute, like, over a coffee break, so I didn't have 15 with him, and I just went on my way. I went to ICRS, CBA, for those of you who know. Those of you who don't, we can give you a short course on that after the class. And there I had my agent say, I need to go talk to the president of this guy's publishing house. I said, they already turned it down. He wasn't interested. He goes, no, go talk to the president guy and tell him I told you to come. So I did, and the president was interested in the book and asked me to send the manuscript. So if I had burned bridges with that guy and said, you don't get it, you're not, you know, everybody else wanted it, that would have been a really losing thing. They didn't end up publishing it. Judy Perry did end up publishing it from Beacon Hill. But it was a valuable lesson, because you never know when these things are going to come back around. And the other thing that happens is that an editor might say no, and it's because of something they know about their house. They know, for example, they're going to cut out their children's line, and they can't tell you because this announcement's just been made internally and they haven't told their children's authors. So you're like, well, why wouldn't you? It's perfect for you. But what you don't know is that editor's also going to leave their job and go somewhere else, and they may want it there. So again, just don't burn any bridges. Don't say all the things you really want to say, and they may be true, but don't think them out loud. And don't ignore their body language. If they're sitting there with their arms crossed, don't ignore that. They're not interested. Or you're not doing the pitch well enough. Or there's something, you know, look at them. Are they leaning forward? Are they engaged? You know, you're adults. You know what somebody looks like when they're interested in the conversation. If they're interested, then keep going that vein. If you start talking about something you're not so interested, but something you say sparks attention, go in that direction. Okay? And again, this is not about manipulating it. There's a lot of freedom in room. You can rewrite things. So if you're pitching an article on one idea and you happen to mention, yeah, and that's when I was the leader of the MOPS group, and they go, what? You were a leader of a MOPS group? Then go, yes, and that actually opens up opportunities for other articles that you may be interested in, and then start the conversation there. I say go for the sale or go for the door. And what I mean by that is that if they say yes, you know, go ahead and say, okay, you know, they'll say, send it to me. Make sure you get their contact information. Make sure you have their address. Ask them for their card. And then make sure you follow up and do that. Make sure you send it. Here's what will happen. Some of you will go in there and you're like, I have this idea and I think it's pretty good. You'll talk to the editor. He'll be really excited about it. And then your friend who's really lame and can't write and has a loser idea goes in and the editor says, yeah, send me theirs too. And now all of a sudden you're like, oh, he's just saying that to everybody. Because my stuff's good, but hers isn't. And if he's asking for hers too, he must just be telling everybody that. Right? That's not necessarily the case. Okay? If they ask for it, send it. I hear editors say all the time, I met somebody at a conference, I went home and told people about it, and then I never got it. The other thing is you need to do is ask them about the time frame. You know, if you're ready to send it when you get home because you've got the proposal written, then you don't really have to ask about that. But if you know you're still finishing up some things and you're going on vacation and it's going to be things, say, is it okay if I send it to you in 6 weeks? Ask them about the time frame on their side. If I get this out to you next week, how long before I'll hear back from you? How will I hear back from you? Now, I know, at this point, when they've said send it, you're like all giddy and excited, and you can barely sit still. You're like, thank you, I don't want to stay longer because you might change your mind. I want to get out of here, right? But just take a deep breath. And at that point, really find out how to connect with them again. You know, will you email me? Should I email you if I haven't heard from you? And this is one question I ask sometimes. If I haven't heard, they'll say, oh, I should be back to you in 6 weeks. And so I say, if I haven't heard back from you in, you know, 8 weeks or something, is it okay for me to email you? Is it okay for me to call you, you know, so that you have a way to do that? Because what happens is you send that in, and your hope and prayer and everything goes with that thing, and you're home telling all your friends that so-and-so asked for it, and you can't wait, and you want to know, right? Because your life is sort of on hold. You don't know if you should send out to somebody else. So have a way to resolve it. Take a deep breath in that meeting and go, okay, how do I follow up on this? And the same is true for articles, because they'll hold them too, you know? And so you want to have a definite way of getting there. Go, you know what, we'll hold it if we like it, but we're not interested in publishing it. Well, how long will you hold it? Will you tell me that you're holding it because you like it, but you're not ready to publish it? Find out those details, okay? I promise you it'll make for your summer much better if you know that. When you send it to them, include a reminder in it. We met at Right to Publish. We talked about my 10 marriages. You said you had 9. We kind of connected on that. Whatever it is that they'll, you know, remember, if there's something interesting you talked about, some that connection you made, try and do that, okay? Because that'll help trigger their memory. Oh, yeah, she was the one who, kind of thing. And maybe it's even just talking about your book. Oh, yeah, she was the one with the book that did such and such. If an editor says no, we already talked about this. Basically, if you've got another pitch, make it then. Well, can I tell you about another book? And you know, if you've got 15 minutes, you can do it, right? Or another idea, or get feedback on that idea. But whenever the appointment's over, be gracious and be done, okay? And so if they're really not interested and that was your only idea, thank them and move on, okay? What you want to do in this is you really want to worry more about the relationship than the sale. I sold my book to Judy Perry, but I made a lot of friendships with the editors that I have done. And the best way to make those relationships, and I'm not pitching Right to Publish for this, but is to come to the same conference over and over and see the same editors over and over. I think one of the reasons that my book sold at Tyndale is because I had an appointment with Ken Peterson every year that I could, pitching him ideas, and he's like, you know, it's not right for us. Nobody's going to buy this one. You know, every year there was something new, but he gave me a nugget of something to go on. I tried to improve it. I came back and I said, last year you said this wouldn't sell because of such and such. Now I've got this because of this and this. And that kind of thing builds up a relationship over time, and that's how you actually make inroads in this industry. Because then what'll happen, and this is what actually happened with us, is that Ken Peterson said to my co-author, now you guys haven't hit it directly yet, but let's go to dinner and talk about it. So one year we went to dinner and sat down, and he said, what happens if this happens? And that's how that book was born. But it wouldn't come to that place if I didn't have a relationship. Like I said earlier, you can't take them out to lunch or dinner. They've got things that are going on. But at some point after making successive pitches of developing a relationship, of following up on time, of doing the things you do, they'll invite you into a relationship if they like what you're doing to work with you on that. So worry more about that than the sale. And how do you do that? How do you build relationships? The same way you do in real life. Once you're here, what I did is I always, that you've got the addresses in the book of all of the editors. Anybody I met with, I sent them a handwritten thank you note. Thank you so much for meeting with me at Right to Publish. I was the one who had the coffee spill on my shirt. You didn't like my idea, but I want to thank you for your encouragement. Whatever it is, just to kind of cement that, lock that in there. Okay, so again, not that you need to feel guilty if you don't do these things, but these are just the little things that can help build the relationship over time. Okay, as I said earlier, and I really want to stress this, you're not going to have all these things that I just said. You're either not going to have thought through, you're not going to brought them with you, your appointment's not going to work out that way, your editor's a flake and doesn't ask the questions you want him to ask. Whatever happens, don't let that throw you. This goes back to what I said earlier, is God's in control of these things. He cares about your manuscript more than you do. If it's not with this editor, not with this appointment, it'll happen in his time, in his way. So don't get all freaked out about that. And like I said, I last year had to pitch stuff with nothing. I was pitching these prayer articles with just, hey, my name's Jennifer, I've written this much. I've written these things. Would you be interested in an article on prayer? Tell me what you're kind of looking for. And I hate to do that because I really wanted to be prepared to know what they did, but I just wasn't in a place where I could be. So you just do your best. Finally, let me just say, save your pitch. Save that pitch. Because if that book sells, you're going to need that pitch for back cover copy. You're going to need that pitch every time you talk to somebody, they go, oh, what's your book about? You're going to need that pitch when you do radio interviews, and they'll say, well, tell us what Six Prayers is about. So that pitch, you're going to be fresher and cleaner and thinking about it in a more concrete way now than you will after you've spent the whole time writing it and it's now 2 years later before the book is released and you don't remember. So save that pitch because you're going to be pitching that. You're going to be writing little one-liners on blogs. You're going to be having to put little reviews on things. You're going to have to tell people in an email what your book's about. And that pitch will come back in handy. So you've got the one sentence that you led with. You've got maybe a paragraph more that you've described if somebody asks for more information. Those things, save them because you will forever, ever be pitching your book. That's what sales is, right? You're standing there going, you need to buy my book because it's going to tell you all the answers to. You need to buy my book because it's the greatest read on whatever. And again, you want to use the same kinds of things. Whatever it is that intrigues the editor is what should probably be the thing that intrigues the reader. Okay?
So what's your 30-second pitch for a Six Prayers?
Actually, I did the three of them. There's different ones. It depends on who I'm pitching to, but that's what I say. It's not about formulas. Prayer's really awkward. Oftentimes it's used just that sentence. I go, prayer's really awkward, isn't it? Nobody says that. And people go, yes. You know, and that and starts a dialogue right there. What happens, one of the things that's really great is that when you use something like a number in the book, Six Prayers, God Always Answers, the first question is, well, what are they? So if, as you're writing your book, if you're doing a nonfiction, if you can do things that intrigue the book, and I talk about this in one of my other classes that I'm teaching, but if you can do things in the manuscript itself to make it more intriguing, do. You know? So, because that just creates the questions. And people will come into Barnes & Noble's and go, what are the Six Prayers? And they'll want to see. And then we titled the chapters really weird and crazy things so that they can't tell. Prayer doesn't work, the trading floor of the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, stupid shapes, weird colors, crooked necks, and no screw tops, the prayer God rarely answers, so now they've got to read the book.
If you know your chapter titles, but you don't have the chapters fleshed out, would you put those titles down if they're clever?
On the,
Like on your one page?
Probably not, you're probably not going to have room.
Okay. But would you,
you could have that as the backup document, so they're like, oh, tell me more, you could use that as a backup document, I wouldn't use that as a lead document. I would have the experience, the picture, the contact information, because that's something they could take with them and go to their friends back at the office. Oh, it's a book on how popcorn sales have increased over the past 30 years, and she's the queen of popcorn or whatever. There you are in your little popcorn costume. Yeah. Yeah.
What part does the author actually
play in that? Yeah. That's a really long and complicated question.
Sure.
It really is. Because.
The 30-second answer.
I will. I will, but I want to tell you that because it really is, I have written really great marketing plans and had an editor tell me I can't present this to our publishing committee, which consists of marketing people. I'm like, why not? He's a bad? He's like, no, it's too good. They're going to think you're a demanding author. A marketing plan is essentially what you can do. The promotion side of the marketing plan is what you can do to help sell the book. The connections you have, the people you know, the places you're willing to go on your own dime, the things you'll do like setting up a web place, whatever that kind of thing is the promotion side of it. The marketing is who is this targeted towards? So this is targeted to Boy Scouts. This is targeted to 20-somethings who are still searching for their purpose in life. This is targeted towards middle-aged women with kids that are under 4. This is, and so what you basically do is you give them a brief description of what that looks like. So the primary market for this book, you know, for example, the six prayers. Our primary market for this book is not prayer warriors. So I don't remember what we put in the marketing plan, actually, but it was probably something like, this book is for prayers for those who feel disenchanted, who feel like they don't pray right, who feel like they don't always have answers to their prayers. And this is a different group than what most prayer books are written for, because most of them are written for people who are more serious about prayer and want to learn more. This is for people who don't want to learn more, but want to know if it works. You know, that kind of thing. Who are these people? Well, they're people who are disenfranchised from the normal church. They're people who are on the fringes of church. They're people who maybe had some Christian upbringing but don't go to church. It's people that watch Oprah and want to know if God will answer their prayers but don't really believe in God. It's those kinds of things. So I might specify who those people were in separate categories. So I might say, here are the Oprah followers, and roughly we know that there's X number of people who buy these kinds of things. The people who are disenfranchised from the church, Barnabas says 20-year-olds are leaving the church in greater numbers. I'm making these things up, so don't go quoting them. Jennifer said the 20-year-olds are leaving the church because they're not whatever. Those are the kinds of things that you put in the market. And then what they want to know is how can they reach those people? Well, you can reach some of those people through Relevant Magazine or through Crosswalk or through Today's Christian Women. These are the readers of Today's Christian Women. These are the readers of 65 and camping, you know, 65, when you're over 65 and camping magazine or whatever, you know, that you want to get those kinds of specific details in there, because what that tells them is, this an audience we know? Is this an audience we can sell to? Is this a book we can market? So that's a really brief, short thing. There are lots of great books. The Jeff Herman book will tell you lots on that, and there are also classes here being taught on it, so pick up a tape if you need more. No. If it's a specific article that's written, do not. Because if the first one buys it and the second one buys it, you are in a whole lot of trouble. But if it's different, if it's on the same topic, if an editor at Today's Christian Women says, yes, I'd love an article on exercise, and the guy at Muscle Magazine says, yes, I'd love an article on exercise, those two markets do not cross over, and the way you would write it for Muscle Magazine versus for Today's Christian Women is very different. So in that case, yes, you could. But if it's a specific article that's already written and they've asked for it, that means they're interested. It means they're taking it home. They're showing it to the other people on the team. They're all going to buy into it and either buy it or not. And then you come back and go, oh, you know what? An editor at such and such did it. You will never write for them again, because they'll have wasted a whole lot of time and they'll be very upset with you. And that point, they'll remember your name. When you send in queries and stuff, they won't remember your name. But all right, we're running a little bit behind. Can I take your questions? Personally, I'll stick around here and ask that. Is that okay? I just don't want to. I know Lynn's a stickler on time, and I don't want to be the one that holds everybody up. So let me let you go. Thank you for your time.